And that's the kicking music that means it's time again after a week off for another edition of Pop Culture Happy Hour. I'm Linda Holmes. I'm the editor of NPR's pop culture and entertainment blog, Monkey See. And I'm here around the table with this week's version of the Pop Culture Happy Hour crew.
Is there something different?
Let's start with you, Stephen Thompson. What do you do at NPR?
I am an editor and writer at NPR Music.
And Trey Graham, what do you do at NPR?
I am the movies editor for NPR.org and the resident recovering sickie.
Ew.
And you are definitely not Glenn Weldon.
I could pretend.
Why don't you introduce yourself?
You know what? Your voices are so similar.
Yeah.
I know.
Just pretend to be Glenn Weldon.
And your hair.
But who are you? Yeah, it's true. But who are you really?
I am Tanya Ballard Brown. I work with the National Desk on NPR.org. I'm an editor there.
So you edit stories of national import, correct? Like, you know where things are and who leads what?
Like, you know where China is.
I think what they're asking is, what are you doing here?
Yeah. Well, I'll tell you exactly what Tanya is doing here. When we started planning for this show, we had a short list of people that we thought we would love to have on the show at some point. Right. One of them was Barry Hartiman, who you all
know. And all of them said no until we got to Tanya.
Oh, wait. So I wasn't at the top of this list?
Oh, no, you were. Yeah. You were right
very
there.
High.
Oh,
okay. Very so high up there.
Yeah, once we got through all the other people, we asked you.
I rose to the top.
You were at the top of the list that we had at our disposal.
I see.
We have had Tanya on our list from the beginning, and we're extremely glad that she could be with us this week. We wanted to start off, it is summer blockbuster season.
It is.
We're getting into the time of the movies that make a ton of money as the heat settles in.
Yeah, we've gone from complaining about the absence of the heat to complaining about the heat.
That's absolutely true. And this weekend, The Hangover Part 2, a little movie some of you might have heard of, made, I believe the exact number is a billion dollars. And so one thing that we were going to chat about today is the fact that it got, I think it's safe to say, terrible reviews. Terrible.
The consensus content of those reviews is basically what it's like. The Hangover 2, The Hangover.
It's not really a sequel.
It's simply a remake, beat for beat.
I have not seen it.
I have seen the movie, and it is a remake, more or less beat for beat.
I see. Yeah. So one thing we were going to talk about, you know, the terrible critical reviews followed by the big box office has touched off this discussion again about critics are irrelevant because people go to see the movie anyway. And so there's been a little bit of a discussion about what exactly reviews are for and what exactly blockbusters are for. Now, Miss Tanya was telling me via email that she is all psyched up to go see X-Men First Class.
Yay!
She's all excited. And,
but wait, Wonder Woman isn't even in that movie.
That's true.
I know, because Wonder Woman is DC.
Oh, fine.
Marvel.
You are the new Glenn.
We need to get you in a room with Glenn Weldon, lady. So here's my question to you as somebody excited to go see X-Men First Class. What are your expectations of X-Men First Class? Like, what's important to you in evaluating the movie? I got a point here I'm getting to. Are you looking for it to be, like, new and different and unexpected, or are you going to it thinking I'm going to be surprised? What I'm trying to get at is this.
I think the answer is no.
What I'm trying to get at is this. Go ahead.
I'm going because I kind of follow comics, and so I just want to see how they're going to do the storyline.
Would you go if the reviews all said that it was terrible?
Yes.
And why is that?
Because sometimes the people that review those particular movies haven't followed the comics, and so, you know, they're coming to it without all that backstory.
Sure.
You just kind of want to see, like, oh, you know, like with the Captain America, I'm looking forward to seeing that because they're telling Captain America from a particular, you know, the 40s and that the origin. And you just sort of want to see if it unfolds like it did in the comics and how they're going to take that storyline and bring it to life on screen.
Right.
And it really doesn't matter what the critics say.
Well, in this
case. For me.
Right.
In this case, I think we're touching on an interesting point, which is that I think there are certain movies that are big enough that to watch them is to be able to participate in somewhat of a national conversation that is a little bit separate from whether the movie is any good. For example, until halfway through this last season, I watched every episode of American Idol. And I didn't do that because American Idol was so unbelievably good. I watched it because everyone was talking about it.
Right.
And
except me, because I'm like, what? I really wanted people to shut up, stop talking about this show.
But you know, but you were missing out on a lot of smack talk and goofnuttery surrounding the discussions of that show.
Right.
And with, let's say, a Captain America or with an X-Men First Class or, you know, with
those
movies.
Green Lantern.
With a Green Lantern.
Yeah.
That you, to see that movie is to then be able to discuss that movie with other people who...
Right. Follow comics.
Follow
so comics.
Right.
So
I mean, there is
and if
no
there's one thing that we all want, it's to be able to talk to comic book fans.
Right. Yes.
Well, I think you're right. There's a larger conversation, and it's not just about particular genre fans. You want to be able to participate in the general cultural conversation around an event movie. And you can define event movie however you like, but right. There are certain things that people are going to be talking about, and you either get to stand there and go, uh-huh,
right.
Or you get to chime in. And you can't chime in unless you've seen it.
Right.
Unless you're, you know, just working off the trailer.
Right. And it which I've been known to do. Which is fine. You know, you talked, Stephen, about a national conversation, but even if it's not a national conversation, it may turn out to be, like Tanya is saying, it's a conversation with comic book fans.
Sure.
I would have gone to see Bridesmaids, for example, no matter what anybody said about it, simply because I knew that whatever it turned out to be, that it would be a topic of conversation among people who, like me, are interested in the fates of comedy starring women and movies in general headlined by women. So I knew that that was going to be a conversation. Now, in that particular case, I also suspected that I would like the movie. But that conversation was going to happen anyway, just like the one about X-Men First Class will happen among people who follow comics.
I think so.
And Captain America, too.
And the Green Lantern.
And are you excited about it?
Yes.
Are you excited about the Green Lantern?
Yes.
You're optimistic?
June 3rd, June 17th, and then July the 20th. I was in there somewhere.
You're optimistic about Ryan Reynolds as the Green Lantern?
No. However, I am going to see that movie anyway.
So you're willing to overlook the lead?
Yes. You know, I don't know. You know, Marvel has done a good job of casting. I mean, Robert Downey Jr. is Tony Stark.
That was an amazing piece of casting, mm-hmm. I think. I mean, I think everybody now sort of recognizes there's nobody else who could have done that.
Well, and a hot Australian dude is well cast as Thor.
Oh, totally, yeah.
Yeah. Oh, yes. Yes. So
Tanya.
I had forgotten.
Yeah, she's forgotten and now she's remembering. So you really need to give her a moment.
So maybe they see something I don't see. So I'm going to go.
But with a movie like The Hangover 2, I it always reminds me of like what you'll read about the fact that people go to McDonald's, for instance, if they're in a strange city. It's not necessarily about, I believe McDonald's is the most excellent thing that I could possibly get, but you know what you're going to get. Movies are so expensive now that people, at least if they go see The Hangover Part 2, so even if they feel like it is going to be exactly the same movie, at least you sort of know what you're going to get, or you feel like you know what you're going to get.
Right, and I should say, first of all, actual box office number, $142 million.
That's a lot.
One of the biggest comedy openings on Memorial Day weekend ever,
I think it's
right?
the biggest comedy opening ever.
Not even weekend specific? Okay.
But I think your theory, here's a good point. I mean, Tyler Perry movies. Hello.
Right.
Oh,
absolutely.
Look,
that's
you know
the other one I was
going to
mention.
I am a critic, and I think critics have a function. It's not necessarily a customer service function. It's not necessarily a you should go see this or you shouldn't function. Critics exist in part to say, hi, remember this movie? It's happening.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Start the conversation.
So wait, you're like a Walmart greeter?
Exactly.
I don't understand.
Yes, I'm a Walmart greeter with really pointed opinions.
I will say I do think that critics, there is a role they play because Trey with I Love You, Philip Morris.
Mm-hmm.
This movie was kind of not on my radar. And I read the review, and I remember Trey and I had a little back and forth,
mm-hmm.
and so I made sure I saw it. That movie's hilarious
yeah.
to me. So I'm like, now I'm like, I need to get the DVD because I want to watch it 2 or 3 more times. So like you said, they can introduce you to things that you might otherwise,
right.
You know, because I'm going to go see X-Men, and
there
I'm going to go see these other things.
There
know,
is absolutely movies. A curation aspect to it.
Sure.
You know, you want to surface things that people don't necessarily hear about because not every studio has the marketing budget that the studio that produced The Hangover ever had.
Well, yeah. How many people would be talking right now about how they want to see The Tree of Life, which is the new Terrence Malick movie starring Brad Pitt? It is a very strongly reviewed movie, mm-hmm. and there's an enormous amount of interest in it on that basis.
Very difficult, very challenging movie.
It's been described as a tone poem?
A kind of tone poem on film, yeah.
Right. Well, and I think there are certain movies where...
See, that's one I don't want to see.
Me too. I have the same reaction. Tone poem. anything with poem.
Hey. Green Lantern, a tone poem.
Hey, dude, you going to the new tone poem tonight?
Well, seriously, that is a great point, because I think there are certain movies for which the reviews turn out to be extremely important, and other ones where I can definitely understand the point of view. Like, if you had a job as a critic and you said, I don't know what the point is of writing a review of The Hangover Part 2, I would sympathize with you. And it's the same way Tanya brought up the Tyler Perry movies, and that's one that I was going to bring up too, that you feel like you sort of, that brand is well known enough mm-hmm. that if you like it, you go. And if you don't like it, you don't go.
Exactly, because I think I've only seen one of those movies in the theater.
Right.
But otherwise.
Here's a classic
example. But he's making lots of money.
Well, I mean, basically with the Tyler Perry movies, if I'm not mistaken, they're made for a fairly limited budget. They are guaranteed to make a much larger amount of money, and it's got to be the most reliable investment in movie
so.
Making right
yeah.
now.
And
I think they're formulaic. I mean, Madea act the fool.
Acts the fool. There we go.
Just got called the Madea act the fool part one.
Part 11.
They could just call the first one Madea acts the fool part one.
I mean, but there are other things that are formulaic about them too. There's, for the most part, the sort of affluent guy is always the monster, and mm-hmm. the blue collar working mm-hmm. class fellow is the savior, and there's always
a sister with somebody who's
right.
in trouble. But they're reliable entertainments mm-hmm. is the point. There's a critical function that's about calling out excellent examples of a particular form.
That too.
You know, there's nothing wrong with formula. Classic example that Bob Mondello likes to cite, one of the earliest pieces he ever did for NPR, as a matter of fact, was when the movie of Annie came out. He did a piece that sort of pointed out that Annie is Oliver in drag. It's the same show.
Wow.
It's got the same structure. It's even got tunes that are kind of ordered in the same way. And there's a particular musical example that compares Where Is Love from mm-hmm. Oliver and a song that fits in the same spot mm-hmm. in Annie. It explains to you that these shows are built in the same way and that they're successful for the same reasons.
Right.
That's not to say that you would never review any. Right. It's a great show.
Right. Again, about Bridesmaids, I think Bridesmaids was a movie that was helped enormously by good reviews, mm-hmm. not just because it got good reviews, but because those reviews explained a little bit about what it was. Because the marketing for that movie really stressed that it was sort of raucous and raunchy and dirty,
yeah.
so that people wouldn't think it was a quote-unquote chick movie,
right? Chick comedy,
and
yeah.
so that hopefully men would be willing to go to it, I felt, was the aim of a lot of the marketing.
I feel like they pitched it like it was Hangover for women.
Mm-hmm. Right.
But and that's not what I saw when
right.
I saw it.
No. When you see it,
wait,
it's
you
actually,
went to see that?
Yes!
It's actually,
and I laughed.
And it's actually, in addition to being really funny and raucous and raunchy, it's also this extremely perceptive, I think, movie about women and about friendships between women and the sense of competitiveness when
yes.
your friends become friends with someone else. Even if it's just your friend becomes friends with someone else, it's not a jealousy situation that gets explored a whole lot. And so I thought it was very insightful in that way. And criticism, I think, helped explain what that movie was, not just that it was good.
Right, because initially, honestly, when I thought it was like a Hangover for one, I wasn't interested. Mm-hmm. And so this is why I'm just seeing this movie this past weekend, because, reviews were like, sort of explained it a little more, like Linda saying, and I was like, oh, I want to go see this movie.
So you went to see it because of reviews?
I guess so.
We've proved some sort of point here.
Well, and that movie has had really good
legs.
Sticking. Yeah, mm-hmm. it dropped, especially the first to the second weekend. I don't remember the exact figure, but it dropped very little compared to
it
the
actually
way
picked
the
up midweek in its first week, which is not terribly common.
There were a number of signs in I think the box office stuff that indicated that it was.
That
it
word
was
of mouth
benefiting
yeah.
from word of
mouth
quite a bit.
Yeah. So I think we're burying the lead here. And I know that some of you, you know where I'm going with this, do you?
Oh my.
I do. I think
we How did Kung Fu Panda 2 do?
It did not
box very
office.
Well,
no,
I'm afraid.
It did not do as well as I'm sure you would.
On,
I know
me,
you wanted it to make $200 million.
Let me dig that up for you.
The only thing is I wanted there to be one empty seat in the theater where this obnoxious kid sat. Not one of mine. Not
okay.
one of mine.
But you saw it with a child you did not enjoy.
I realized how excellent my own kids are compared to everyone else's.
They really are.
You know, it's interesting. It seems like the reaction to Kung Fu Panda 2 has been somewhat mixed.
A mere 60.9 million.
60.9
million. I know, it's actually kind of a big opening.
That's a pretty big opening.
A mere $60.9 million for a martial arts doing panda.
Yeah.
That's
yeah.
shocking.
I yeah. won't be going to see that one.
But you enjoyed it, Stephen?
I did enjoy it.
And once again, could not have been dissuaded by any number of things.
You know, it's funny. I you know, on Twitter, you know, I had made several comments about how I was going to see Kung
yes,
Fu Panda
had.
2. The fact that I cried during Kung Fu Panda 2.
Oh, wow.
It is... You know what? If
just,
that movie
I could just
weren't...
see Tanya's opinion of you just changed
yeah.
right then.
How much respect did I have from you before?
Your reliability as a narrator of this podcast yeah. just sank.
Anyway, go ahead.
You know what? Kung Fu Panda 2, I found unexpectedly moving. And I have said of both Kung Fu Panda movies that if they were not called Kung Fu Panda, if they were called, like...
The Tree of Life?
The Bear of... Yeah, the Bear of Life.
The Bear of Manchu...
Yeah, if it was like China Bear, you know, it would. I think those films would make a lot less money. A lot fewer people would know what they are about.
You do and, know what a Kung Fu Panda movie is.
You know,
is about.
When I remember when the first Kung Fu Panda movie came out, and you and I, Linda, had some sort of text message exchange where you'd mentioned Kung Fu Panda, and I was before I'd seen it, and I was like, "What's that about?" And you texted back, "Well, there's this panda." But I think that if it were called, say, China Bear, it would make less money, fewer people would know what it's about, and they would be higher in the collective critical estimation.
Not if they had called it Butterstick.
Oh, my God.
Tanya loves Butterstick.
Butterstick.
I love him so much, I can't even think of his real name.
You should explain.
You should explain.
You should explain what Butterstick is.
Yes.
You know, outside the Beltway, they don't all know who
no
Butterstick
one knows
oh,
about Butterstick.
Butterstick is Taishan the panda, and he went home. He left
to China.
But there was Butterstick, the nickname for this panda at the National Zoo.
Because they kept saying when he was born that he was about the size of a stick of butter, and the name caught on.
And he had a webcam, right, that you could
yes,
watch him.
Yes, now he's home.
But does he do kung fu? Probably not.
Probably not.
But we don't know, because he's off in China.
Have you ever been,
he's training.
Have you ever
might
been
know
to
how
the
to
National
do
Zoo?
Now.
They don't do anything. They lie around.
They don't. They are
and they eat bamboo.
As I remember tweeting the last time I went to the National Zoo, that if I wanted to watch a lazy animal lie around and scratch itself, I'd look at my reflection in the TV screen.
But anyway,
I think those movies would be taken more seriously if they were not called Kung Fu Panda. Among other things, the animation is unusually incredible, I think, in those movies.
So, Stephen, let me ask you this. You would say the Kung Fu Panda
is awesome.
Was a bargain at any price.
A bargain
right?
at any price.
Well, you know, it's funny you should say that.
Really? Is that some sort of segue?
I hear a segue.
That brings us to our next topic that we're going to talk about today.
Wow.
Which is actually one that, believe it or not, Stephen suggested.
Ooh.
I know.
Oh.
And
Stephen had an idea.
And it's pop culture price tags is what we're calling it. And in the world of pop culture and entertainment, books and movies and other things, what you would pay for different kinds of things and what seems overpriced and underpriced. And my opening salvo is Netflix streaming has gotten to the point where I think it's a very good bargain compared to most other entertainment.
Mm-hmm. In terms of hours per dollar, like the ratio. Because, I mean, when you think about it, to sort of expand on this point, I mean, there are entertainments... For example, Trey Graham likes going to, like, the theater.
Right.
Yes, but I'm a critic, so it's free.
No, it's the theater.
The theater.
The theater.
That you're paying, like, what? I don't know. I'm sorry. I don't
yes,
know
actually,
what the theater it depends on, obviously, on the production.
It depends on the show and the company that's producing
and
it.
The venue.
And the venue, yeah. But, a top dollar theater ticket in Washington, D.C. right now is $100.
Yeah.
$90 to $100 on the weekend.
And the average production lasts...
6 weeks.
The amount of
it's
time
a high value.
That's the opera.
That's true. That's true. You break that down per hour. That's not bad.
Yeah, the average show is probably 2 hours to 2:20.
Yeah, so you're paying roughly $40 to $50 an hour for that form of entertainment, which you can never, which can never be duplicated. You don't own anything except a playbill.
And in some respects, that's why it's worth that much,
right?
Because it can't be reproduced,
right?
And that it's you're getting a unique performance every single time.
That when it's when it is extraordinary, will only get better in memory.
Right, it lasts so long.
I'm like a goldfish, though.
So
I forget things as they happen.
So you can't
every
keep
time
it
you swim around the bowl.
I've already forgotten the A segment of this show.
So you can't keep it, so it lasts forever.
Irony.
Oh, goodness. If you are talking about the difference between waiting to see a movie at home for cheap versus seeing a movie in a theater, what will make you decide, I'm going to go see the movie in the theater, other than, I'm going to ask Tanya, other than, you know, it being about Green Lantern? What will get you to go see the movie in the theater?
Idris Elba.
I am 1,000% on board
with
that.
Even if he is cloaked in facial armor, so you can't even tell
like
it's him
Thor.
Until the credits?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. He wasn't in that nearly enough.
No,
I felt.
And
he, also, they
he did have
up too much.
Entirely too many clothes on.
Yeah, it's true. I was telling Tanya earlier they are his show that he's been on the BBC. Luther is coming back for a second season. I think she's going to be very happy about that news.
Yes.
Anyway,
he tweeted me back once.
Oh, did he?
It's like you're married.
I know. You hear that, Amy? It's like me and Idris are married.
All right. So, other than Idris, what gets you out to the theater?
Oh my gosh, I love the movie going experience. Like just
me too.
The whole when the seats are clean and comfy and work, and like the whole darkness and the Dolby surround sound. I can't duplicate that in my house because
the lack of distractions.
Yeah, my televisions are little and old, and so it's just not the same. I mean, they're doing special effects and things now. None of the televisions in my house can do. Mm-hmm. I mean, I love it.
Yeah. So part of it is visuals that you don't feel like your television will adequately serve.
Right. That said, I think among the worst deals in terms of pop culture price tags is
Jujubes?
Is the Dots candies. They get stuck in your teeth and they cost like $4. No, 3D.
Oh, yeah.
I agree. Yes. No.
It has now gotten to the point where, A, because I'm a cheapskate, B, because I'm generally going with multiple people, and C, because they render the film unnecessarily dark, that I actually pursue the non-3D screenings as much as humanly possible.
There are good arguments to be made for a 3D screening discipline that will give you a good viewing experience. There's an excellent essay by, I think it's the lead projectionist at the Alamo Draft Houses that was posted in response to Roger Ebert criticism of the darkness of these screenings. And apparently if you tune the projectors properly, it's not bad. But you're right, there's too much. We don't want to bother spending the money on the bulbs and the labor required and the training required to make those screenings good. At this point, I'm with you. I think I would not seek out a 3D screening unless I knew it was at one of those houses where they paid people to do it right.
Well, and at the same time, some of these 3D...
Like Avatar. I mean, I saw it in 3D, but the whole point of the movie Avatar was like the 3D effects because the storyline was, I mean, nothing.
Right.
Yes, that's true.
But there are a lot of films where the 3D feels very, very perfunctory. Did Tangled need to be in 3D? It did
I think
not.
That's...
I actually saw Tangled both ways because I saw it once with you guys and once with my other half, and there were some lovely effects. That lantern floating
sequence. The lantern thing was nice.
Was
but
beautiful
was it,
in 3D.
Was it worth like $6 extra?
I'm not sure that it was, no.
Yeah. If you're going to go see Avatar, the reason to see it is how amazing it looked and what they accomplished with the 3D because you would not see it for the story.
excuse me, Linda, that was the best motion picture of that year. From what I heard.
No, it was not.
Actually, no.
They're now doing it for so many movies, and there are people who sort of say, you know, everything should or can be in 3D. And, like, I can't understand why a relatively ordinary movie, like a movie that's just a story about regular people in regular settings, why it should be in 3D. And increasingly, I think they're heading for a point where they will eventually want to do that with certain, like, big budget, you know, like the Hangover 3 will suddenly be in 3D or something like that, which just strikes me as
I think some. I mean, I think it's just gilding the lily. I mean, or whatever that expression is.
No, yeah.
They're trying to paint a piece of poop gold and fool you with it.
But it's a little different than gilding the
right.
Lily. It's more gilding the poop.
That's what I really mean, yeah. Gilding the poop. I mean, what it is like the movie, let's give them all these bells and whistles and they'll pay attention to that stuff and it won't really reflect on the acting is okay, the storyline isn't that great, you know, and we need this, we want to make money and we got to get people into these theaters and we want them to buy the DVDs and...
Yeah.
Well, it just seems like it's just an excuse to charge more.
Well, and there are definitely early indications that 3D is starting to fade in terms of it's starting to make up a somewhat smaller chunk of the revenues on opening weekends for movies that are offered in
You know, there's been a lot of critical pushback and a lot of anecdotal audience response to 3D. I think the most telling indicator I've seen is a story this week that indicated that Wall Street now sees it as a not particularly good thing to back.
Yeah.
And if that's the case, you better believe we'll be seeing less of it.
Yeah.
All right.
You know, one of the reasons why there is some difference in quality, of course, between different 3D movies is that some of them are organically 3D from the beginning and that's the way they're shot and that's the way they're planned. I think that was clearly what happened with Avatar. But then other ones, they go in after the fact. The first time I remember this was, or hearing widely about this was with Clash of the Titans, but I know there have been others where they go in after the fact and add the 3D, and I think that's universally considered to be a vastly inferior process. And in fact, I got the press release maybe a week or two ago that next April they are re-releasing Titanic in tacked on 3D.
Yeah.
I never liked them.
Which...
Yeah, this is...
he's going to die. Come on. I mean, hello.
Yeah, he's still going to die in three dimensions. Is, you know, sorry to spoil it for you people.
Three dimensions would be one more than it had last time.
It'll be like, blub. And then it'll be like, whoa, that little bubble just came right at me.
Like, no, this is, you know, it is James Cameron. So you have to assume that the 3D process will, in this case, be applied in a thoughtful way. In at least
that's the Avatar fellow, right?
Yes. It is, yes. Okay. And he's been at work on this for some time.
This, you couldn't give us a new movie with some new stories?
Apparently not. Just to give the man his due. He is technically adept, and he is one of the leading proponents of doing it right if you're going to do it. Uh-huh. So okay. I would not assume that this is going to be like Clash of the Titans, for instance, which had the 3D process applied after fact and
y'all
looked terrible.
That.
Somebody said to me, oh, well, you know, but you know you'll still go out and see it. And I was like, Titanic in 3D? No, I won't.
I really won't.
No, I really won't.
Totally won't.
I didn't even bother to buy Titanic.
I didn't even go see. I didn't even go see Avatar.
It's like 3 hours long, right? So in 3D, it's 9, right?
Hi-yo.
Well, and yeah, I mean, you know, you'll get the naked drawing scene in 3D, and you know, perhaps
and the necklace.
You are not necessarily
floating off.
Yeah, sorry, I'm not really the target audience.
It's true. The necklace will float through the water in 3D and all that stuff.
Oh, and don't forget the on the thingamajig with the wind blowing and the, yeah.
Yeah, I'm king of the world and the world.
Yeah, because
world.
That moment needs to happen in 3D.
Yeah.
I've been wishing
that someone would relive that.
I didn't get why people were crying in the theater over this movie. I mean, okay, he's gonna die because this is Titanic, and most of those people, except for the unsinkable Molly Brown and one other two or three people, did not survive the Titanic. So,
yeah, it's true. You should have started crying for him when he got on the boat.
Yeah,
most of later.
Like, ooh, we got the ticket.
Like, frankly, if you're a couple and one of you survives, you did well. Like, tell that to the old couple who's lying in their bed below
right while
deck.
The water comes really boiling up.
It's really true of so
the
many
second
marriages.
Class and the third class folks.
Exactly. Worry about those people pounding on the cages and all that stuff. Those people you feel bad for. Half of this couple survived. They won. They won the Titanic.
Not only
and she had a big bauble.
Seriously, she survived with a big diamond necklace,
that
and
she
then she threw
sail.
It in the ocean. I got no sympathy for this lady.
No.
Well, the fact is, we all know she's gonna live.
Right.
She's old, and
well, and she has to tell the story.
Yeah, somebody.
Yeah. That's one of the.
Are you ready to go back to Titanic?
I knew it was only.
He was
a
in Weird Science.
Don't you remember
him?
It's Stephen's Bill Paxton slash Brett Favre. It's the same thing.
I came back for you, Mary. Okay, so quickly to get back to the actual topic we're discussing.
Yes.
Pop culture price tags.
Yes. Mm.
Here's a question, completely unrelated to everything except the actual topic.
Yes.
Last week, Lady Gaga, her highly anticipated album, Born This Way, came out and was released on Amazon as a download, Amazon MP3, the entire album for 99 cents.
Mm-hmm. For a limited...
For one day.
For one day, okay.
And I will say, in the interest of full disclosure, I bought it. I'm no fool. I mean, there are a lot of people, when you think about it, who already paid 99 cents just to have the song Born This Way.
Right.
This is the entire album.
Right.
And the effect of this, besides bringing down Amazon for half a day... And presumably, as of this taping, I'm not actually sure what the sales figures were, but it's also designed to sort of make it clear, like, here is a juggernaut who in the first week sold, you know, 1.7 million,
right.
whatever that number turns
out to be. Both for her and for Amazon.
Both for her and for Amazon. It's a loss leader for Amazon. Mm-hmm. It gets people to sign up for the thing. And also, you know, wildly inflates her sales.
Her first week sales numbers.
You know, and presumably probably dampened some of the piracy. Mm-hmm. You know, surrounding that record. Mm-hmm. It should be noted, this is not the first time this has happened. Amazon frequently will do like deep, deep, deep discounts on MP3 downloads that they've worked out with the record companies, whether it's...
Oh, especially with way old back catalog stuff. You can get 100, 150 tracks of old classical stuff that's from the vaults for that same 99 cents.
Yeah. There are certain titles where they've gone wildly, wildly cheap on. They did that with Kanye West's My Beautiful Dark Twisted Fantasy, which, you know, was a similarly massively anticipated record, kind of a slightly differently hotly anticipated record. This is sort of, I think, viewed as like strictly a commercial juggernaut that everybody's going to be buying, whereas Kanye, not only were tons of people buying it, but it was also very widely regarded as like the album of the year. But for such an enormously hot title to go for 99 cents, does it now sort of create the expectation that if you sit tight... You can just get the album for 99 cents, and already the record industry is sort of battling the baseline of free in terms of piracy.
Right. The question you ask about cheapening is an interesting one, because I do think prices for digital downloads are destined to settle lower than, you know, prices for a hard copy CD. Mm-hmm. And they've had the same debate about digital books. One of the reasons why the publishers were so upset that for such a long time all Kindle books essentially were $9.99 was that they felt that that was going to establish
an expectation
that a book should cost $10. And I have to admit that as a person who owns Kindle books, when I now see one that's $13.99, $14.99, I do sort of have that reaction of like, ugh. It used to be that you would compare that $13.99 to the price of the hardcover.
Right.
Yes.
Now I mentally compare it to the price I used to pay, which was $9.99.
So those baselines do get set. I remember I had to buy the Collective Soul song Shine, the for All Songs Considered, terrible song. And I remember bristling at it being $1.29 on iTunes. Just like, what the hell? $1.29? That's Highway Robbery. Where it's, you know, I buy how many Diet Cokes a day?
Right. Six or eight.
At least six or eight.
So you walk around with the 2 liter in your hand.
You know, consumer behavior changes all the time. Marketing behavior changes all the time. And I think in the era of Living Social and Groupon, the one-day limited sale is not, you know... How long have we been looking at department store sales where,
Blue light specials.
You know, how old is that? How old is the...
Actually, they don't do those anymore.
But how old is that idea? And how old is the, you know, first 2 hours of Memorial Day, the first 2 hours of Labor Day?
But if you want to enjoy a blue light special in the old days, you had to go to Kmart. Whereas I bought Born This Way...
So I still have to surf to Amazon?
I had to type an A into my browser, at which point Amazon came out and I bought Born This Way.
But the thing is, the question you asked, is it going to encourage people to sit there and think, well, if I just wait it out, you know, I think the answer to that is no, because they're never going to do it with everything. So you're never going to be able to be completely confident. If they're smart, they're not going to tell you from the beginning that in 2 weeks there's going to be one day when
that
you'll
was
be
a
able
well
to get
kept
it from
secret.
99 cents. So people are still going to, if you're eager to get it when it first comes out, they're still going to have to go and buy.
You know what that is also somewhat an ad for in a way? Not only the Amazon MP3 service, not only Lady Gaga, but Twitter. That's how everybody found out about that sale.
Right.
I mean, Twitter, I think, is sort of the equivalent of that blue light flashing.
All right, pop culture price tags. Well, I think if you have your own thoughts about what is overpriced, underpriced, or priced just right, find us on Facebook. We're at facebook.com/PCHH, or come to the blog at Monkey C.
Where the price tag is
$0. That's right. The price tag to participate in either of these is $0.
So we encourage you to contribute generously to your NPR member station.
It's true. And And it is, of course, on top of the price of your computer and internet connection. But other than that. So that brings us to our final segment of This and Every Week. What's making you happy this week? Stephen Thompson, what's making you happy this week?
Besides Kung Fu Panda 2?
Yes, besides the hope for Kung Fu Panda 3, I suppose.
Right, what is making me happy is a package I got in the mail today.
Uh-oh.
Now, as those of you who work with me here at NPR know, I have a formidable collection of Bucky Covington CDs. 17, to be exact.
Now, who is Bucky Covington?
Bucky Covington was on American Idol, four seasons ago? Five seasons ago. And came in, like, eighth or ninth?
Something like that.
And he was sort of a token kind of country singer. But he's actually done... He's fared relatively well as far as American Idol aspirants go. So... For whatever reason, his label sent NPR, various reviewers and people at NPR, many, 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 many copies of his album. And I went around the building collecting them from all the various freebie piles and arranging them at my desk area.
In a kind of mosaic.
There's a Bucky Covington wall behind Stephen's desk.
It's like a mosaic, and it's like if you go way out, you get a larger picture of Bucky Covington.
No, you don't.
So for the longest time, I had 17, and I ultimately managed to pass that number with all the unwanted copies of this CD by some guy named Zade, where I collected 23 copies of his unwanted CD.
Right.
And now have those arranged in a gigantic stack. Well, just today, a friend from a music PR firm, who I'll keep nameless just in case, because I don't want her to get in trouble with Bucky Covington's people, sent me 8 more copies.
Oh my.
So now I have 25 copies of Bucky Covington's CD.
Well, that sounds like a nice round number. Not round, but a nice, number that's a good target, and you can kind of retire this project?
No. There is an arms race afoot.
No.
I imagine that there is someone out there with more. I like to think that I am the proud possessor of the world's largest physical collection of Bucky Covington CDs.
Including possibly the label.
including
Bucky Covington.
including possibly Mr. and Mrs. Covington back home. And so I will never stop. I will never stop. And if anybody wants
If
anybody wants one of my copies of Bucky Covington CDs, they can have it just as soon as they're willing to pry it out of my cold, dead hands.
Wow.
But that's what's making me happy, is 25 Bucky Covington CDs.
That is outstanding. Trey Graham, what's making you happy this week?
The headline, Representative Wiener, uncertain whether lewd photo was of him.
Oh, poor Representative Wiener.
Poor Representative
Wiener. That's really, I'm sorry, that's all I got. Mostly, I am sorry that I couldn't resist that, but it was right there on Google News staring me in the face this afternoon, so.
Not the first time.
So to speak.
As it were. Now, mostly what's making me happy is being back from the DL list, because I don't know if any of you saw my semi-coherent tweets over the weekend, but I've been laid low in the bed for the entire Memorial Day weekend, taking several medications. And
that sounds great.
I don't know. I was going stir crazy. I'm glad to be back at work. I am particularly glad to be back on the podcast after a week of vacation, during which it can now be revealed Linda Holmes was in Los Angeles picking up a Gracie Award.
Oh, yes!
Award-winning superstar!
That is true. And my little shout-out with regard to the Gracie Awards would go to Nancy Giles, who was the hostess of the luncheon, which was much more my speed than the fancy gala.
The fancy gala dinner.
It was like the technical awards.
Yes, and the luncheon hosted by Nancy Giles. She is the best. And if you seek her out online, she's done comedy. She was on China Beach, and now she's a journalist. And she's also really maybe like the best event host ever. She makes everybody feel comfortable. That part was great, great fun. And so big thanks to Nancy Giles for handing me my Gracie.
I have nothing more specific than that.
That's okay. That's
We're glad to have you back. That's making me happy too, Trey Graham.
Me too. I'm just happy to see Trey Graham again. And happy to be back myself, of course. All right, Tanya Ballard Brown, what's making you happy this week?
It's a short week.
That's true. It is a short week.
It's a short week.
We had Monday off.
Also, my sister-in-law is coming to town with my nephew, and I haven't seen him in a long time, and he really loves Toy Story, or at least he did back in the day. He's like a grown man now. And so I'm looking forward to that. That makes me happy.
Are you going to sit him down and make him watch Toy Story?
I should, because he certainly had me sitting down watching it back to back.
Or possibly, has he seen Kung Fu Panda?
Well, I think he's about 10 years older now than those Toy Story days. Well, but yes, they're coming to town. I get to hang out with them.
I would mock your love of Muppets, except I have one sitting on my knee during much of this podcast.
That's true. Family should always make you happy. I had several things to choose from in what's making me happy this week, but I'm going to mention two things, one of which I'm not going to fully get into until Glenn is here next week. Glenn will be back next week. He's perfectly fine. He's just on vacation. So one, I just want to say there is someone out there who knows that they sent something to sort of Glenn and sort of me. Mm-hmm. And I'll be taking care of that on next week's podcast. It's a highly exciting and awesome happening. So that's making me very happy, even though I'm keeping it a secret.
Are they superhero pajama pants?
No, they're not. The other thing I'm going to choose that's making me happy is I finally have figured out how to handle being on Twitter and watching The Bachelorette. Which is, I can't tweet about The Bachelorette the whole time it's on, right? Because my regular Twitter people will go crazy.
Will hate you.
But at the same time, I am overcome with the need to talk to someone about The Bachelorette.
Yeah.
Because
I'm caught up on it now. So
start another Twitter account just for that. And
That was option A. But then I realized that if I addressed all my tweets to a person,
right.
Then normal people don't see them. And by normal people, I mean people who don't also follow this person, no offense.
Which I do, incidentally.
I know. So I finally figured out, as we went along, that if I could find a couple people who were watching The Bachelorette who would talk about it with me, I could just tweet to them.
Oh.
So this is my happy, happy shout out to my pals who watched The Bachelorette with me. There are a couple of them. They know who they are. And let me tweet at them all night long about The Bachelorette because it solved my problem. And what it means is if you want to see all the tweets about The Bachelorette, you can always look at the feed, at the full feed, and you'll be able to see it. But normally they will not flow into your Twitter feed. So I have conquered the problem of watching The Bachelorette via social media.
Now, next up, World Hunger.
Now, you have not conquered the problem of watching The Bachelorette.
No. I have not. There's a guy.
And that is a problem.
There's a guy who wears a mask. Wears a mask, like the Phantom of the Opera, except it looks more like a Catwoman mask. And he talks about how he wants it to be all about his personality, and he doesn't want anybody to make judgments based on looks, so he wears a mask.
Right.
A mask.
And unfortunately, somehow, that does not make him immune to the judgment of others.
Yeah, wow. Yeah. Funny enough, the guys kind of make fun of him for wearing the mask.
Because it's crazy.
It's vaguely crazy, yes. So I'm mesmerized by this season of The Bachelorette, which is actually not even a good season of The Bachelorette. Which, think about what that means. And yet, I have this urge to talk about it with people.
But you need to tune in to Basketball Wives.
Season
3.
Now, Tammy, who used
you were non-something-something factor. I'm like, whoa. I'm right then, girl.
Now, these are NBA wives. Are they real NBA wives? Do you know?
They
were.
Let's see. I think there is a wife now. There's one who's divorcing her husband. And then Shawnee O'Neal, who divorced her husband.
Okay.
So the basketball ex-wife.
Is it Tammy who used to be on The Real World and then was married to Kenny Anderson on that show?
Yes.
Okay.
And she was the one that was called the non-factor. And she was like, girl, in New York, and where we are at, we'll do this and the other.
I'm just going to jump in here and say, nephews or no, this is what's making Tanya Bellin come back this week.
And she goes all the way back, Tammy on The Real World goes all the way back to the perhaps iconic line of the history of The Real World, which is, it wasn't not funny.
Yes. I totally remember that.
Those of you who were Real World
viewers
will remember Tammy's infamous moment of, it wasn't not funny. And now she's on Basketball Wives. I think that's what's making me happy too.
Awesome.
Oh, it's just such an incredibly happy week. Anyway, that brings us to the end of another episode of Pop Culture Happy Hour. You can find us on Facebook, as I said, at facebook.com/PCHH. You can also follow us on Twitter. You can follow me and the blog and The Bachelorette at NPR Monkey C. You can follow Steven at I Dislike Steven. That's STEPHEN. You can follow Trey Graham at Trey Graham. That's Trey with an E and Graham like the cracker. You can probably follow Tanya Ballard Brown on Twitter. Can we follow you on Twitter, Tanya?
@TWBTDOUBLEB.
TBB. You can follow our esteemed producer, Mike Katziff, at Mike Katziff. That's K-A-T-Z-I-F. Mike's band, Hello Come In, provides our in and out music. You are listening to it right now. And thanks to all of you guys for being here, especially Tanya. Thank you for visiting us.
Thanks for having me.
Oh, it was great. And thanks to all of you for being here. And we will see you back here next week.